wholly owned subsidiary of, I believe, Tico, which is they were, for years, they were owned, I think that's Tampa Energy Cooperative or whatever, but Tampa, Florida owned them, and they were mining all that coal out and shipping it down there to burn in their coal-fired plants. Because all my friends, you know, worked for Gallo Coal. They were all coal miners. And I, honest to God, whenever I'd go stay all night at their house, as one would do when you're a kid, whenever we went up to Gatliff, because that's where they live, the Gatliff part of, the Gatliff community of Williamsburg, that you, once you crossed over the train tracks into Gatliff, there was a sign that said, and it was there for years, I remember seeing it as a child, you are now entering Gatliff. You are beyond the law.
Nice.
And the coal company put that up in, like, the 20s. And even the state troopers wouldn't go up there. It was like, well, they'd call, if there was a problem, I mean, a murder, domestic violence, shootings, whatever, they would call the coal company, and the coal company's into quote-unquote, we'll use your little quotey fingers, internal security would take care of it. And you'd see these guys, and they always...
Oh, thugs.
Hmm?
Thugs.
And they drove around in these white vehicles, usually white Ford Broncos. And that was the running joke when the whole OJ thing happened. We're like, well, he must work for Gatliff. And we're like, you know where he's running to? He's running up to Gatliff to bury that body. And throw that body down a coal mine. And that was the running joke, which of course is a crass joke, but we were kids.
Right, sure.
And it was, you know, if anybody can get him out of that, it'll be Gatliff Coal because they got more money than God. And that wouldn't be the first body buried up in a coal mine. And I mean, and people think that stuff, you know, they watch Dukes of Hazzard and go, that's funny, you know, a little corrupt fat man, you know, controlling an entire community and owning the police department. Ha, 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 that's funny. Ha, 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 I can take you to those places.
Indeed.
But it isn't, you know, it isn't humorous anecdotal fun that is wrapped up in an hour and everything always works out for the best in the end. It's where people get murdered.
Yeah, plainly put, yeah.
You know, there's a southern expression, which I don't know if it creeped over your way far. If you've probably heard it, there's, you know, some people need them some killing.
Oh, yeah, he needs a good killing.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And I heard that my entire life growing up. It's like, you know, well, you know, certain stuff just happens because, you know, he needed some killing.
You remind me of the closing line of a great short story by Flannery O'Connor. The name of the story is A Good Man is Hard to Find. And there's this just shrewish, batty old grandmother who gets the whole family in trouble and, you know, and on the verge of murder. And, because nobody's going to run out and read it. At the end, the psychopath, who is known as the Misfit, blows away Granny, and his final remark is, you know, she would have been a good woman if they would have been somebody there to kill her every day of her life. So, yeah, I know what you're talking about.
But there's, you know, I meet people, and it started when I was in college, you know, because you went away to a liberal arts college, and you meet people that go, and you tell them about your upbringing, and they're like, well, I didn't realize there were places like that. It's like, you know, that sounds like something out of the last century. It's like, guy, I can take you places where people don't have running water right now. You know, that, you know, you ask them who the president is, and they have no earthly clue because they don't have a television, they don't have a radio.
Oh, yeah, I left, I left Alabama for college when I was 18 years old and was happy to have the shoals in my rearview mirror because I was young and stupid. But, you know, and it's not like I went to Harvard or anything. I wound up at a little college out in Missouri. You know, come on, Missouri.
Mm-hmm.
But I was going to school with kids from Chicago and kids from St. Louis and kids from Kansas City and, you know, more, I don't know, considered themselves more sophisticated than some redneck from L.A. And I actually got queried as to whether or not we wore shoes. And I said, well, you see, they're on my feet. They're brand new. Got them just before I come here. generally we don't wear them in the summertime. We got a big old tree in the backyard, and our pastime shinnying up and down that tree. We was going to shinny up and down the new phone pole, but we got splinters, and they sat there and just swallowed it whole.
Really?
You know, come on, it's Missouri. But yeah, and people believe that, Tobias, because they want to believe that.
Well, I have a belief that is the foundations of the stones of our lives are made up of all of these places. You know, and that as much as we're all a tapestry of who we are is woven with these threads of the places that we're from and the people we encounter. And some of them are not the most savory of characters, and some of them are not the most eloquent of places and nice of situations, but without them, we wouldn't be who we are. If you remove them, if you go back and you speak, like, God, that's horrible. I wouldn't want to endure that when you tell them. Because, I mean, I'm a survivor of child molestation at the hands of a minister. And people are like, how could you possibly enter the ministry? And I said, well, I judge the measuring stick for Christianity is Christ, not other Christians. Because if I judge Christianity by other Christians, shudder to think. And I had the same reaction you do when you were saying earlier about good can be done by practitioners of religions, but typically not in the name of those religions, you know.
Yeah, well, and in fact, I have a study was sent word of a study that came out not too long back. Let me see if I can pull it up here. Lo and behold, and I guess it comes as a surprise to some. It comes as no surprise to me. Yeah, there it is. Our buddy Larry down in Florida sent this along. The old canard that people who do not believe in a supreme being are untrustworthy, without morals, and unethical has received yet another rebuke. That's a good Bible word, rebuke. According to a new study published in the journal Trends in Cognitive Sciences, that's why I can just imagine me reading that. That's one of those where I'd have to read two-line paragraphs six or seven times just to understand them. According to a new study published in the journal Trends in Cognitive Sciences, atheists are, quote, just as ethical as churchgoers, and religion is only one way through which people can manifest a moral code. Dr. Mark Hauser of Harvard University reported that his research team was investigating the foundations of moral behavior and religion. The research suggests that intuitive judgments of right and wrong seem to operate independently of explicit religious commitments.
Sure.
Yeah, I mean, shall we remind ourselves and everyone else that Adolf Hitler was a baptized and in good standing member of the Roman Catholic Church?
Never excommunicated.
Nope.
And I always point that out when I was a Catholic for 10 years. I brought that up. I was like, the fact that he was a Catholic in good standing.
And still is.
You know, the Catholic, into which my baptismal priest at the time said, well, the church, and he didn't cop to it. He said the church made some wretched and just despicable decisions. And they should be held accountable to them. I said, well, at least you're not hiding behind us, because the fact that he was a Catholic in good standing, and still is, they never rectified it by saying, you know.
And you know what? John the 23rd, who was responsible for Vatican II, which I'm sure you're aware of,
yep.
Got himself in deep trouble with the church hierarchy before he was, voted, elected, selected, whatever, smoke went up a chimney somewhere, Pope. And he got himself in trouble because he was castigating the church for not excommunicating Adolf Hitler.
Mm-hmm.
And, of course, he got dead relatively quickly after he got to be Pope.
Yeah. He needed him some killing.
See?
And, well, it becomes this, what the average American, and the average person for that matter, but certainly the average American, can't tell you the difference between morals and ethics. That's a ball of wax they just lump all together. What's the same thing? No, it's not. You can have ethics. Because they don't teach that. They don't teach you ethics in school. You know, the only time the average person ever even hears the word is when it's in a blurb on the news, when they hear it used to mixed up in terms like business ethics, which is a contradiction in terms like military intelligence.
Indeed.
Because, you know, should they be teaching these things? Absolutely. Because it's just like these Baptist so-called friends of mine that I've grown up with who'll say, well, yeah, these people who've got more house than they can afford, and that's what tanked the economy. And I'm like, yeah, no. Or, you know, people default on their credit cards. And I'm like, yeah, you guys think that's a sin, but what's the bigger sin? Somebody defaulting on a credit card because they can't pay it because they made the decision to buy food.
Well, do you remember the story along around about Christmas time of the priest in England? I forget if he was Catholic or Catholic light, you know, Anglican.
Mm-hmm.
But he said, he told people, go into these stores, shoplift, take their stuff.
Mm-hmm.
And my God, shocked gasps of absolute horror. Oh, he means it metaphorically. No, I mean, go in and take their stuff.
Right, because that's the true thing. It isn't race that divides everybody in this country, even though there are racial issues. I'm not stupid. It's class. But race plays a part into class in this country, and the one thing that you're never allowed to talk about. Martin Luther King was allowed to protest and do all these wonderful things, but the moment he started talking about in the last 6 months of his life, you know what? The disparities between rich and poor, he got a bullet in the head. The moment you pull the curtain back and say, guess what? It isn't divisions of black guy versus white guy versus brown guy coming to take black guy's job. Everybody be afraid. It's guess what? We all have a lot in common here. There's a strata of the people on top. Who was it who said, you know what, the rich are different than us?
That's the conversation between Fitzgerald and Hemingway.
Right. And the moment people get that through their head, you know, there's the strata. The rich are different. They don't want to play by the same rules. And you know, and they've got everybody convinced that that's why we're one of the few countries that does not ever produce any kind of actual statistical chart of what the rich is. You ask people, what's rich in America? Well, it's over $100,000. It's over $250,000. It's over, you know, everybody, it's a exploding scale. It's a moving target. And it's like, okay, $1 million, we could all agree that over $1 million should be considered wealthy unless you make $1 million. And then they'll say, well, we've got two kids in college and, you know, the yacht needs to be gold-plated again, and, you know, and it's like, look, if you can't agree that $1 million of liquid worth, you know, total assets minus total debt, isn't rich, then we're done. But they don't ever want you to talk about what the true class system is. You know, wealth is the demarcation of class in America. And the people on the bottom have been getting hammered because, like we said, the last 10 years there's been no job creation. And wages have been going down. There's been no job creation. Inflation's been going up. So guess what? Your pay's been going backwards. And the first thing Obama did was cut Social Security, Medicare, and Medicaid. So guess what? You're not going to get a cost of living increase because you don't need one because guess what? There's no inflation. Really? I can do math.
Yeah, and well, some of the things that Barack Obama has done, President Obama has done, have been really tone deaf, Tobias. Genuinely tone deaf.
He's tone deaf to his base, and that's the craziest thing I can't wrap my mind around.
It's well, like, you want another example of that? Strap in, Tobias.
Hit me.
Strap in. Yeah, hit me. Put a little stank on it.
Put some pepper on this. Yeah.
Headline, Obama nuclear plant, president to announce loan guarantee for more than $8 billion.
Yeah.
Hello?
My wife asked me when she was watching them, and she said, do you think that's a good idea? I said, no, that's the most expensive way to boil water there is on the planet.
More than $8 billion in new federal loan guarantees to build two nuclear reactors in Georgia could be the first step toward a nuclear renaissance in the United States. A renaissance? Really? Do we want to be using that word with nuclear? Isn't that so? Oh, God, we got to fight this fight again, Tobias.
And when the people that got him elected the first time do not show up in droves at the polls. You know, when they have a recipe for success, it's like it was brought up last night on your program, and when they stay home, just like they did in Massachusetts, then...
This is only the beginning.
Because
have
you been listening to Malloy?
Oh yeah, oh, every night.
You know, he's calling for, you know, let the Republicans have the whole ball of wax back, have a Democrat blowout. Just let them, you know. And if this stuff keeps up, it wouldn't surprise me if it had.
You know, bless her heart, Allison Fisher, who's an energy organizer at Public Citizen, said this is a this is a preemptive bailout where the government has already guaranteed to saddle taxpayers with any failure that the in nuclear industry might run into. And that's what it boils down to.
Yeah. Has any nuclear power plant ever made any money?
Don't think so.
I mean, because you got to get past paying for it first before you got to get out of the red to get into the black, right?
Yeah, and then there's that troublesome business of, you know, toxic waste.
Yeah, storage and sequestration of all the crap you produce.
Oh, there we go, sequestering again. You know, that's the neat thing about wind and solar. You don't have to sequester the waste from sunshine.
Yeah, exactly. A trillion BTUs.
And there's no wind waste.
No.
Now, you do have to pick up a little bat ceviche here and there, but, you know. That can be, you know, we can work on the bat technology. The bats and the birdies will be okay.
Trillion BTUs of sunlight coming at the earth.
This makes me crazy. You know what I could do with 8 billion? No, before it sounds like I've gone all, you know, whoo, crazy. You know what we could do with $8 billion? Do you know that $8 billion, Tobias, would pay the salaries of every working mountain remover in the industry right now at the same wage level and put them to work really attempting to reclaim the mountains that they've ruined?
Yeah.
For the rest of their work lives, Tobias. Up to Social Security. And I'm talking about health care. And I'm talking about some sort of reasonable pension.
It's just like these.
And that would put people to work.
Yeah.
Because, you know, there are mountain removers out there who are laid off. And they weren't laid off because of something that, you know, tree huggers done. They're laid off because their bosses, like Don Blankenswine, are nothing but the most cruel and cynical profiteers. They don't give a damn about working people. That's why they're doing it in the first place, Tobias.
Yep.
Because mountaintop removal takes less workers than going underground. And the trade-off, of course, is that mountaintop removal then transfers onto the entire community, willing and unwilling, the risks, whereas a coal miner who goes underground takes the risk upon himself. We could... $8 billion. Oh, my God. $8 billion for two nuclear glow-in-the-dark boondoggles in Georgia. I read this, and I yelled out loud. Agnes ran into the room. What's wrong, honey? And then she just looked at it and said, oh, that... makes me nuts.
Well,
makes me angry. You know, it's another. So Georgia's going to get two nuclear power plants that they don't need. Meanwhile, Appalachia can go F itself some more, right? Is that, have I got the message there? Was that the memo, or am I overreacting?
You're underreacting.
Okay, I feel better. Well, by the way, Juanita reminding me that TECO, Tampa Electric Company, that's her electric supplier that you mentioned a little bit ago.
You're welcome. If she ever wants to come to Kentucky, I can show her where they've decimated every county in the lower southeastern Kentucky to dig out all the coal that keeps her life on.
Yeah. And the thing is, Juanita, you know, Juanita is awake in the nightmare. She knows.
And that's just to show you how these gigantic mega exploiters tie the country together. You know, it's the reverse Robin Hood effect. It's robbed from, you know, one community. This country has no sense of itself toward the future.
Oh, but by the way, on energy and economic policy, you're going to love this. Jay Rockefeller, my senator, has said that Obama is beginning to not be believable to him. Not on health care, but on the fact that Obama won't say, blow them up, boys! Get out the dynamite! Let me set the first charge! Let's blow up that there Coal River Mountain so they can't have no damn wind power. Yeah, thanks, Senator Rockefeller. He says it in his speeches, but he doesn't say it in his budget proposal. He doesn't say it in the actions of EPA Administrator Lisa Jackson, and he doesn't say it in the minds of my own people. Really, Senator Rockefeller? Your own people? Is that what we are now? We're not your constituents anymore? We're your people? How quaint. Oh, honey, we're serfs now. We're Senator Rockefeller's people. You know what? That one line would have been enough to ruin a politician some years back, Tobias.
Huh?
Yeah. There hasn't been a negative comment about it.
When you tell these, you know, Republicans that our return rate of Congress and you know, congressmen and senators is, we have a 99% return rate. At the height of the Soviet Union, the Politburo was 98%.
Mm-hmm. That's the truth.
And you're like, well, they had less incumbency than we do. Yet, you know, we're the freedom.
Yeah, we got us some freedom.
Yeah. And that's why I posted this chat room last night when, you know, when we were talking about Huey Long. Long said, when fascism comes to America, it will call itself anti-fascism.
Yeah. And I just got this quote in from our buddy David in South Carolina. And Tobias, he said that part of Obama's talk on energy is that he's busy trying to please the Repiglicans. Check this quote out. That's why we need comprehensive energy and climate legislation. And why this legislation has drawn support from across the ideological spectrum. I raised this just last week with congressional Republican leaders. I believe there's real common ground here. And my administration will be working to build on areas of agreement so that we can pass a bipartisan energy and climate bill through the Senate.
Yeah.
Still bipartisan. Is that a verb, to bipartisan? Or can we just spell that with an F and a couple and a K on the end and point at us?
Well, maybe he'll wake up when the haze will wear off when it's Majority Leader Mitch McConnell. And you talk about, it'll be arm twisting and they'll get everything they'll give him nothing. And they're like, here's what you'll get, and you'll get exactly what we tell you you'll get. Because Mitch McConnell is,
Yeah, chinless Mitch is the Senate Majority Leader. I can't wait. That's just going to be delightful, because you know what? Chinless Mitch will do what we wish Harry Reid had done. He will tell the Democrats, in reverse direction. He will tell the Democrats to sit the hell down and shut the hell up that they've got business to do, and they don't give a rat's rear end what a Democrat thinks. They're going to do what they want.
Yeah.
And Harry Reid, if he's still in the Senate at that point, will promptly piss himself. And, okay, I'll sit down. Don't call me a liberal, please, Mitch. Please don't call me a liberal again.
Exactly. And it'll be, well, you know, this has been tied up far too long, and it'll be, they'll ramrod some of my stuff through so fast, it'll make everybody's head spin. You know, it'll be like, oh, this is a mandate, they sent us here to get the log jam cleared up. And by God, they'll go in there, you know, because the Republicans' mantra, if you remember, nothing else is this. You know, it's measure it with calipers, mark it with chalk, and cut it with an axe.
Oh, that's good. It's also, by the way, true.
Exactly. You know, it's, you measure it with the finest device you can find for the most, to be the most exact, but then you cut it with the most inexact tool you can find because you don't care at that point.
Because you're doing destructive work in the first place.
Exactly. It's like, you know, I worked as an engineer for almost 20 years in the appliance industry. And the old running engineer gag was, you know, pessimist sees the glass is half empty and the optimist sees the glass is half full, and the engineer says the problem is you got too much glass.
Yeah. No, I understand what you're talking about. It's like sitting in the dentist chair with a little teeny tiny pinprick of a cavity, and seeing the Dr. Maxwell Silverhammer come at you with a craftsman with a half inch wood bit.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, it's kind of creepy. Tobias, wonderful conversation. I'm glad you rang in.
Keep on rolling.
We're going to try. And if you know anybody that might like to go down to Knoxville tomorrow night, tell them about it.
I sure will.
All right. Take it easy.
You too.
Bye now. Tobias calling from Kentucky, and onward we go. Hey, welcome to the program.
Congratulations to Japan for being the biggest debt holder now to the United States.
Really? Bigger than China?
Yes. They've taken over once again. It's like the Olympics, Bob. Or a finance or something.
You know, I have not been following the Olympics. A very dim view of them, as a matter of fact. Not because none of the sports interest me. I find the idea of the Winter Olympics a lot more fun than the summer ones because, you know, I love all that slickety skatey stuff. You know, and that one particular sport where they cross country ski for a while and then shoot something, I think that's just cool. I haven't been following the Winter Olympics, but I have been following Japan a little bit. Because do you know what the organization Sea Shepherd is, David?
No.
Sea Shepherd, and you can go to seashepherd.org, is an organization that opposes Japanese whaling. Now, I have yet to figure out why it is that anybody needs to eat whale in the 21st century. And I get that the Japanese eat some, you know, pretty interesting stuff, you know, your deadly fugu fish and that kind of stuff. But a little minky whale sashimi, nah, I don't get it. But they go down, the Japanese factory ships go down into the Southern Ocean this time of year and start tormenting the whales. And Sea Shepherd goes down there with, it's got a ship by the name of the Steve Irwin, another ship by the name of the Bob Barker. And they do everything they can to disrupt the whaling activities of these Japanese factory whaling ships. And I've seen some video of it, and it's amazing. And the name of the Japanese group that does this, it's the ICR. It's at icr.org.
Mm-hmm.
And there's a button that says, you know, translate this into English. And being as how I don't read Japanese, I kind of have to. But there's video and stuff there that loads, and you can watch what's been going on. And the ICR is the International... The Institute for Cetacean Research, because they say that this is research. This isn't really whaling, this is research. But we have to kill the whales to research them. And then when they're done researching them, of course, they eat them. But one of the best moments I saw, and it really would have fit in well yesterday with Morian Monday, is footage of one of the Sea Shepherd vessels racing alongside the whaling vessel. Yeah, and you know how those they're whale huggers, I guess. You know what those whale huggers were doing to those poor little whalers?
Oh, what are they doing?
They were playing music at them.
Uh-oh.
Yeah, isn't that terrible? But I love the title on the Japanese ICR site. It said something like anti-whaling activists blast researchers with symphony music. So, you know, and you're like me, David. You see a link like that, you're going to click it, right?
Right.
Well, it turned out that what that was, it was footage of this Sea Shepherd vessel running parallel to the whaling vessel, and they were playing Richard Wagner's Ride of the Valkyries. And I guess the folks at ICR are completely just, you know, didn't get the joke. You know, because it's straight out of Apocalypse Now.
Right.
But I saw that and I just thought, you know, come on. Is there nothing on this planet that is sacred and safe and apart from the human urge to exploit it, rape it, murder it, kill it, eat it? I guess not. And they were complaining, of course, about the false impressions of the false impressions about whales and whaling and whale research that are given by these environmental terrorists. Sheesh.
I actually saw a bit on the movie The Cove where they were talking about how in Taiji that two council workers had spoke up and told people that they were serving dolphin in the dolphin was part of the Japanese cafeteria. And the amazing thing in the movie is because those two guys spoke up and said that, they stopped that actual practice of serving dolphin to children in Japan. It's a pretty, I don't know if you've actually had a minute to sit down and watch it, but I would sit down and watch it this weekend. It's top 10 documentaries I've seen.
Wow, okay, cool.
Yeah.
And for everybody else, title again, please?
The Cove.
The Cove, C-O-V-E?
Yeah, it's about the dolphin industry in Japan, in the caves of Taiji. And it goes into the politics of it. It goes into what you were talking about with the whaling. And it also goes into classifications and commissions and how the government works. And what's really interesting about it is it also ties into a childhood icon, which is Flipper.
Yeah.
Yeah, but the amazing thing about it is it goes into it's a really surreal documentary because it's tied to your childhood. Even if you didn't watch Flipper when you were growing up, and you watched on the reruns on TBS, like all of us did, and you see the guy who was training the dolphins, and then you see the guy who is now, his name is Mike. He's fighting the dolphins. He's fighting against the practice of bringing dolphins to America. And it's a really interesting thing because when you talk about it, I had no idea about this, Bob. But apparently, you know all the aquariums,
yeah,
around the world, the dolphin aquariums. This is going to make a lot of people sick, but it's true. The Japanese are only interested in the dolphins that look like Flipper, and you can guess what happens to the rest of them. So that image, that image that's seared in our heads. People, that image is seared in our heads that this guy had helped promote, and he said he got a Corvette, he had nice houses, he had done the whole, and it worked against him. It was his own living nightmare. and then he became the biggest activist for dolphins there is. But the insanity is they really do kill and just chuck dolphins that don't have the slightest resemblance to Flipper, because all these stupid-ass aquariums demand dolphins that look like Flipper. And there's also a great documentary. I don't know, you may have to rent the DVD, because there's a great, great documentary they put on about mercury in the ocean and the fish and the latest status updates and stuff like that. And it's a really interesting documentary as well. It's about 20 or 30 minutes. So I would definitely check out The Cove. I mean, like I said, it's beautifully shot. It's really sad, but at the same time, you know, and the reason why I bring it up, because the fact that those two people, no one else is going to speak out against the practice of dolphin meat in the cafeteria. If those two council workers didn't speak out, those children would still be eating that mercury-tainted dolphin, completely toxic. So those two guys were heroes. So you get a little bit of melancholy hope in there somewhere.
Jesus Christ.
Yeah.
And of course, you know, whether it's the whale, and to sort of bring it around to where you started, David, it's another, you know, we can't say anything about the 9-year-old girls chained to tables in China,
mm-hmm.
because they hold our debt. And we can't say anything to the Japanese about the fact that, you know, I realize culture is one thing. Well, culture is everything. But there are things that do have to be sacrificed, like whale sashimi.
Mm-hmm.
And it's got to go. It's got to go. Just can't do it anymore. Because if you keep doing it, you're going to stop it. Well, it's like mountaintop removal. If we just let them keep doing it, well, eventually they'll stop on their own, because there won't be any more damn mountains, and there won't be any more damn coal, and there won't be any more damn whales.
This is true, and you know,
and you know, I draw a big, big, broad line between Japanese factory whaling vessels and allowing the traditional Inuit up somewhere in the now melted polar north to go and take a whale once a year. You know, there's a relationship, frankly. And there are still cultural traditions that value that whale and what it does for that culture, that tribe, those peoples.
You know, the trainer of the dolphin in the movie had a moment, which is what made him turn it all around. And it was really interesting. It was the fact that of one of the dolphins that was one of the many dolphins that were stand-ins for Flipper, or actually there was 12 dolphins that were Flipper. Anyways, one of the last ones in the last series actually committed suicide in Mike's arms. And he said the reason why the dolphin committed suicide, see, you don't hear about this stuff in the United States, with good reason. This guy is banned from everything. But he said one of the reasons it committed suicide, because it was in captivity, it knew it was never going to be free, and it knew it could never go in the ocean, and he was holding it in his arms. It went under the water, and it just refused to breathe.
Refused to come back up and get air, in other words.
No. And Mike said that moment did change him for life. And in the movie, which is why I say it's an astounding, phenomenal film, is because in that movie, you see the struggles and the pain that Mike's gone through. I mean, dear God, he's actually had one of his assistants actually choked with a leather belt on the beach, because they were this involved in the saving the dolphin industry. And like I said, it's a really interesting documentary. I couldn't recommend it high enough, and I would definitely put it on your list for this week, Bob. If anyone's listening, I would definitely watch it this week. It's an important film, that's for sure.
Wow.
And before I go, I just wanted to say one thing. I know this may cause some controversy and some a bit of disagreement, but I believe I'm with Mike Malloy on this one. especially after watching that Dick Cheney interview, Bob.
Yeah, that was pretty bone-chilling, wasn't it?
Anyone who doesn't go after Dick Cheney at this point, I don't want to be on your team. I don't want to be on your team. I don't. I'm not going to be on your team. If you don't go after him right now, to me, Bob, it's black and white. And anyone who doesn't go after it, they're going to pay. They're seriously going to pay. In karma, or whatever you want to call it. But when I saw that, when I saw, I think I saw two parts of the interview. When I saw that, I was like, there's no excuse now. He's come back, and he's actually saying, basically, this is what he's saying. What now, bitches? I like waterboarding. I like it. What are you going to do about it?
Eat it and smile.
That's right. And if they don't do anything about it.
And the important is the importance is who he is saying that to. That is directed not at some viewing audience. That is directed solely and exclusively, David, at Eric Holder and Barack Obama. What are you going to do? Indict me? Because I'll remind you that, Jay Bibee and John Yoo have already gotten a pass.
That's right. That's right, they have.
And they were the authors of that evil. Not inspiring.
I might have some type of semblance of change in the works if they actually reached out to Glenn Greenwald in any way. But I know that's never going to happen because Glenn Greenwald scares the hell out of most Democrats. That's why they don't talk about it.
Yeah, for being honest?
Well, they do read him. Well, you know what? That's true. For being honest and also for following the letter to the law. When you follow the letter to the law, that makes a lot of people scared.
Probably all too true.
But anyways, before I go, the movie is The Cove. Go watch it. Actually, I would recommend it on DVD because you get the documentary on Mercury Rising and the extras are cool. But when you see that movie, your eyes will be opened to the world in which we live in, where it concerns the dolphin industry, what people are afraid to tell you, what even the most precious conservation societies around America don't want to talk about because they're so afraid of what's happening in Taiji and what's happening in Japan. And God bless those people for making that film. That's all I got to say. It's out in the open, and everybody can do with it what they will. I hope a lot of people continue to have this conversation and discussion about it. And I hope Mike finds another partner before he passes. He's getting up in age, and he said something that was really relevant. He said, you know, today we're just looking for that one person to pass the torch to. And it's really, really, really difficult now because of the commitment this requires and the danger that this lifestyle is, and the fact that it's not so stable a lifestyle. And when you see it, you'll see what I mean by the fact of what he goes through just to get footage of these of this dolphin tragedy in Taiji and the way they go about it and the fact that he never stops. In some ways, it's directly parallel to what a lot of people are fighting for in Appalachia, what a lot of people are fighting for in all around the world, basically.
I think
it's that glimmer, that spark of
hope,
of freedom, yeah, and hope, yeah.
Yeah, you mean the real stuff.
Yeah, they want the real stuff now, I think, yeah. And they're desperately, I think that's the problem that a lot of people don't realize, is like exactly what Sai Khan was talking about, what was in this film, was the fact that there are so few torches. There are so few torches left on this earth, and there are so many people on this earth, and yet it's so hard to find someone to light that torch now. It's a lot different than it was in, and again, it goes into the film, what's happened with the conservation movements and a lot of the movements and why a lot of these fractures and stuff like that. And again, that's why it's an interesting view. You get to see what exactly happened decade after decade and the steps that broke up a lot of these organizations and why we're at the point we are today when it concerns the environment. It's an enlightening view. So once again, I'll plug it one more time. The Cove.
Good deal. Thanks, David.
No problem, Bob.
Take care.
Later.
Bye now. Interesting issue raised in the chat room, and I always value Lottie's take on these things. He says, wait a minute, Bob, it's wrong for the Japanese to do it, but it's okay for the Inuit? Aren't the Japanese and the Inuit the same people, just culturally removed by a land bridge? If whales are considered an intelligent organism with self-awareness, shouldn't it be wrong for both? I mean, like, human sacrifice was a cultural thing, too, and so is head hunting. I get that. Wow, do I get that. And I guess the fact of the matter is, I'm more kindly disposed to a group of Inuit in a little boat out risking their lives, as opposed to a bunch of corporate wage slaves on a boat not risking their lives. And you know, I don't know, do you say the same thing about deer? And I'm not directing this directly at Lottie. Right now, and it's a fact, okay, this is a fact. Here in West Virginia and throughout a lot of the South, if you did not reduce the deer herd, well, I can't grow a garden in my backyard because of the damn deer. They're rats with antlers. And, you know, the last garden I had, 123 tomato plants and 72 hot pepper plants, and every last one of them were eaten down to the ground. Now, whales can't be compared with that by any stretch of the imagination. Yeah, if it'll stop the Japanese predation of an endangered population, whales in general, then yeah, the Inuit gotta quit too. But bear in mind, the Inuit don't take nearly the number that the Japanese do. They are. It's the difference between eating for survival and and eating for fun. There is no argument that the Japanese are going to go on starvation without their annual ration of whale sashimi. I don't know if you can say the same thing about the Inuit. True, Lottie. The whale doesn't distinguish. And they're much more than an endangered species. They are a sentient life form. And I believe that wholeheartedly. And that's one of those moments when I understand the danger of using believe. But I think one could make that argument reasonably and rationally. Back to the phones. Hey, welcome to the program.
Hey, good evening.
Good evening.
Let's see. I was calling because I was just listening to the last caller. And that was a very interesting call. I was I heard a couple of interviews with the guy who was a part of that movie, The Cove. I still have to see it. I need to go ahead and see that. But I've heard a couple of interviews with him, and it is pretty fascinating because you were saying that they're sentient and that sort of thing. They do have whales and dolphins. And I think elephants, for that matter, have as much brain power as human beings do. And that's, you know, that's tells you a lot about just the whole idea of how we relate to them. And, you know, I understand the issue of, you know, having to eat them and saying, well, these are, you know, these are really intelligent. How can you justify Inuits and other people like that eating them? But the difference is that's not industrial. I mean, that's not, that's, like you were saying, a tribe trying to feed itself to survive, a, you know, a few dozen per year, probably, to feed, you know, a few hundred or a few thousand, depending on the tribe.
I don't think it's even, yeah, okay, yeah.
Yeah, and at that, you're in coal country, and is there, I don't know, but would you say there's a difference between stripping, between actual industrial hundreds of tons per year of stripping of coal and that sort of thing, or I don't know if you would mine coal to feed a several hundred people or to provide power.
No, I think you are pointing out my hypocrisy and doing a very lovely job of it.
I wouldn't say it's hypocrisy.
No, I do. I do. I catch it. You know, when I'm being a hypocrite, I catch it. And I give myself hell for it. And I think my Inuit comment is probably, ill taken. Or ill made, I should say. Because there's no such thing as a little bit of mountaintop removal. There's no such thing as only a few communities affected. And by the same token, the same thing with the whaling. Whaling, there were, you know, even in the days when whaling first started, it's not like, especially on an industrial scale, Haven, this is, when whaling first started, it's not like the oceans teemed with whales. But the fact of the matter is we had best by God on the ground, on the land side of things, pay attention to what we're doing where we live, and it would behoove us to pay attention where they live, the wet world, which comprises more of this world than the dry side does, because things like overfishing may well be one of the puzzle pieces inside worldwide famine. And all of the Malthusian stuff that follows from that.
But I think the difference is that overfishing really began with industrializing. Because, I mean, they lived up there, and as far as the Japanese even, and the Inuit up in the far north, they've been up there for thousands of years, and it's only, what, in the past 100 years or so that this idea of the idea that there might not be any more whales to fish for, that's a very new idea.
Yeah, and I'm something else is being pointed out by Gail down in Australia. She says, as far as I know, the Inuit aren't whaling on an industrial scale. And they're not doing it in the Southern Ocean whale sanctuary, where all types of commercial whaling are supposedly banned. This is quite a serious political issue for us in Australia, because they kill whales in our territorial waters.
Oh.
And yeah, I think the distinction is there, but I do not know for a fact that whaling among the Inuit, and this deserves more research, and I'll probably get a lengthy explanation from somebody listening somewhere along the way. I don't think that the Inuit literally eat the whales to survive. It's not a survival issue. It's a tradition issue. And if it's a tradition issue, then, well, you know, they could very well be in a place where the tradition dies for want of whales to take. You know, it's crazy making. It really is. And the fact of the matter is there's a loophole inside the worldwide agreement on a whaling moratorium that says that they can be taken for research. And once again, it's a case of corporatists taking that idea, research, and using it to as a cover for pure commercialism and conspicuous consumption. Because again, there's not a single person in Japan who is going to go hungry if there's not whale meat brought home. And God knows they're not lighting their lamps with blubber, and we don't need ambergris for perfume anymore. So, you see what I'm saying?
Definitely, definitely. And that's the whole idea of industrializing anything. I mean, regardless of where you go as far as what the topic is, it seems like industrializing anything has become one of the really big problems with society in general.
If you take that idea of industrialization and follow it to its end, the only reason the industrialization is taking place is to profitize.
Right. Right.
Some particular sector. If there was not a massive structure in place, for instance, to make number two field grade Roundup Ready, brought to you by Monsanto corn, profitable to grow, then Mexican farmers, subsistence farmers, wouldn't have quit planting other crops in order to plant that and sell it, and thereby driving up the cost of maize meal and maize flour for basic breads, the tortillas.
But of course, the excuse for that is that they saved millions of people from starving.
Not with number two field grade corn, they didn't. Simply because you can't eat that stuff. The only thing that can eat that is a cow or something that you're trying to short-term fatten up, because that stuff even makes the cattle sick.
Mm.
That's why they have to be in turn loaded up with so much antibiotics and so much hormones and so forth, because it's a way to quickly fatten a cow as opposed to letting it grow in its natural cycle. That's one of the reasons, back to the Japanese, that's one of the reasons that Kobe beef is so much better than the stuff that we raise, because they let the cow go through its natural growth cycle. And it's much more marbled and much more tasty, and we get into these meat conversations, and I just feel waves of hypocrisy just washing over me, Haven.
Well, that's one way.
Because I love me some Kobe beef.
Okay. Hadn't tried that. I should try that.
Oh, it's like butter.
That's one way of industrializing that doesn't, I guess sustainable, I guess you would say. You can have that, you can have that quality, but at the same time, not eat your arm off, I guess. In spite of
Yeah.
In spite of yourself.
And I think there was some good Michael Pollan stuff over at alternet.org in the last day or so. It might be worth going and looking at. He doesn't write anything that I don't just get all over, because it makes so eminently much sense.
Right.
It's hard to avoid. So, it's not an intractable problem. Sometimes you just have to draw a line in the sand or the water and say, we ain't going to do this no more.
Yeah, because it's in the service of profit. That's the problem. Industrializing music, industrializing energy, industrializing just all sorts of things. Doing this in the service of profit is really that seems to me like that's what the bottom line is, and that's where so many of these problems come from. And as a matter of fact, you were talking to me. Mentioned the nuclear issue. Now, one thing that I didn't know, because it was in the Oh, Project Censor. They had one of their top 10 censored stories was about the fact that right around the, you know, right literally up the road from where I am, in Wake County, there is the Sharon Harris nuclear power plant. There is no Yucca Mountain, but Sharon Harris apparently has turned into a de facto Yucca Mountain.
Oh dear God, they're dumping that crap there?
Yeah. Sharon Harris is the home for two or three neighboring nuclear power plants. They send their stuff here by rail, and that's been happening for years, and we have apparently this gigantic pool, or I guess a few pools, of spent fuel rod. And I did not know that. It's also on Counterpunch. Pools of Fire is the name of the article. And, I hope that these people don't think, or my president, Mr. Obama, doesn't think that they're going to be sending more of this stuff to Sharon Harris.
Well, they're going to send it somewhere. You know, maybe they can send it, maybe they can send the nuclear waste from that, those two filthy nuclear reactors that you and me are going to pay for. Remember, we're going to pay for it, Haven. Maybe they can send that over to Perry County, Alabama, and dump that amongst the coal ash there. Because, you know, that's usually how it works out. You find somewhere that people are, where there's no rich people to complain, and you tell them to eat it and smile and call it economic development, and we're going to bring you some jobs.
Well, see, that's the thing. I mean, where they are in Wake County, where this particular power plant is in Wake County, I mean, that's Raleigh. That is the capital of North Carolina. That's the edge of Research Triangle Park. That is, I mean, these, you know, Duke, North Carolina State, the whole, this is it's a surprise that they would be able to, I guess they did it basically under the radar. Because there's a lot of, you know, pretty well educated and, you know, high earning people in Wake County. But if they don't pay attention, or if you feel like you're gaining the benefit, you don't necessarily care, I suppose.
That's a tough analysis.
But anyway, nuclear power is safe anyway.
Yeah, right. Clean, green nuclear power. Here we go.
Right.
It makes me nuts. Watching an absolutely unresponsive government. You know, if your EPA Administrator Lisa Jackson and you really care about this kind of stuff, and then Barack Obama announces $8 billion of loan guarantees for two nuclear boondoggles that may never generate so much as a watt. How, if you're Lisa Jackson, do you not get on the phone and say, "What? You don't want me here anymore? You're done with me? You want me to quit? Is that the message here?" Because there is no room for nuclear power as it is currently constituted in our energy portfolio. Because someone will have to pay the price for it with their blood, Haven. Certainly seems that way to me. You know, these are plants that are going to be in Georgia. I can't imagine that Mike and Kathy are particularly thrilled at the notion of little Molly growing up in the shadow of some sort of nuclear holocaust waiting to happen. And I understand a lot of the frustration I've been hearing out of Malloy lately, simply because, you know, dadgum, you know. Nuclear, this is a battle we fought and won a long time ago. And dadgum, if a Democratic president isn't the one who's trying to bring it back. I'd expect that out of a Bush. I'd expect that out of a Reagan. But not the guy who promised us hope and change.
Right. Yep.
Sorry, I'm squawking or something. I apologize. It just gets all over me. And yet at the same time...
We have two... Democratic senators here. Wait a minute. We have one. And I am going to write her just basically very short, very straightforward little question, not an essay. Just ask her, what do they intend to do? Does North Carolina have anything to say about what they're going to do with this, the waste from these two plants, if and when they get off the ground?
And you know what else you might do before you write that letter? Do a little self-education and study the wind patterns. See where the airborne radiation will blow. I'm not, and I don't know what the answer to that is, but it's something I would want to know if I was going to be, you know, because not that far from Georgia, and we don't know where they're going to build them. And you know, for me on my end, Haven, there's not even a net gain, because it doesn't mean less mountains are going to be blown up.
Right.
It's not like this is going to be a replacement for, this is going to be in addition to.
Yeah.
You know, like I said, you know, a week from tonight, I'm going down to Institute, West Virginia, where they've got a great big tank full of Bhopal.
A tank full of what?
Bhopal. Methyl isocyanate, same stuff that wiped out Bhopal, India. There's a Bayer Ag Sciences plant in Institute, West Virginia, that used to be Rhone Palanque, that used to be this, that used to be Union Carbide. You know, same guys who brought you Bhopal.
Oh.
And I get the creeps every time I go down there. I know people who are in the fight, to get that out of there. And there have been accidents and fires, and still, you know, our government, nah, not so much. My God, a man working at DuPont in Bell, West Virginia, not too awfully far from here, he was sprayed with phosgene gas just a couple of weeks ago. Poof. Goodbye. And, you know, no real cane raising from our state government here. They sent out the West Virginia Department of Environmental Protection, which is as useless as teats on a boar hog. Well, everything appears to be okay by us. That's comforting. Haven, good hearing from you, my friend, and I hope we will talk soon.
Have a good one.
All right, bye now. Somebody, Haven, calling from North Carolina. This rolling in from Cindy in the Great Northwest. Spent fuel rods, where to put them? Up the politicians' and businessmen's asses. Ron in Raleigh pointing out, a good friend of mine was an engineer at Shear and Harris. There is, in fact, open pool spent rod storage on this site. These rods and rods from other southeastern newt plants are a part of the Southern Compact. They were supposed to go to Yucca upon completion. But, you know, they're just sitting there with nowhere to go. Gail writing in to add, with regard to the whale issue, Australia also fears for the safety of our favorite whale, a white albino humpback, who has been named Migaloo, which means white fella. He's easier to spot than a regular whale and also quite people-friendly, which makes him more vulnerable. Queensland have declared him a special interest whale. And Gail adds, in the interest of balance, I should point out that U.S. Navy sonar causes whale beachings, brain hemorrhages, and hearing damage in whales and other creatures. And that's the absolute truth. We have ignored what is literally under our very noses. We've ignored I subscribe to that view that the Earth is an organism in and unto itself. And, you know, here for a few decades, I've gotten to be, you know, a speck on it, as we are all specks. And as semi awake in the nightmare specs, what is our only moral choice? Our only moral choice is to try to be the best speck that we can possibly be in regard to the rest of the specks on the planet. And we're all specks. There are people specks and whale specks and mushroom specks and turtle specks. Snake specks, lion specks, bacteria specks, We're all specks. And imagine the manifest ego involved for one speck to think that it is better than another speck. And then there are some really, really evil specks that think that they are not only better than the rest of the specks, but have the right to do evil to the rest of the specks and with regard and do evil to the whole organism that is this little traveling roadshow through the universe. This little blue-green marble time machine. You know, we can't go backwards, but we can go forward. We're all engaged in time travel. No, this is not suddenly turned into Art Bell or George Norrie. But to the extent that there's a concept of time, we're traveling forward through it. Hello? David in South Carolina notes, the waste, of course, is coming here to South Carolina. And I'll bet you I know where in South Carolina. You find me the county in South Carolina that has the highest unemployment, the highest concentration of brown-skinned or dark-skinned people, and a place somewhere out in the piney woods with a pit in the middle of it, and yeah, it's gonna go there. Because it's not going to go near the well-to-do white folks in Charleston. Oops. I think I did it again. You know, meanwhile, remember the Obama administration, the one that wants to give $8 billion of your money to build a disaster... twin disasters in Georgia. Well, they're liberals. Bill Rainey, who is president of the West Virginia Coal Association, said we got 132 million tons of coal reserves that are still in the ground because them liberals won't let us get it. About 1,300 employees could be subject to some kind of action if these permits are not issued. It's hanging up employment. It's hanging up production. It's hanging up revenues. Oh, it was third on your list, Bill, but baby, it's first in your heart with a bullet. It's hanging up revenues. We can't get answers from the federal government. The fact of the matter is those 1,300 employees aren't subject to some kind of action. What they are subject to is having their worlds ruined. And they're subject to having their worlds ruined not by environmentalists and not by the not by the EPA. They're subject to having their worlds ruined because they were placed in a situation of utter economic desperation. In which they had no choice, no real world choice, but to do the evil business that is mountaintop removal. Poorly educated and absolutely joined at the hip to mountaintop removal. And there's Bill Rainey saying that they're subject to some kind of action. That means their asses will be canned by the company, not by environmentalists. They will be canned by the coal companies because all they are, is a tool. No different from a backhoe. Or a dozer. No, they are different from backhoes and dozers. Because the backhoes and the dozers and the big dump trucks are actually more valuable to a coal company than is a human being. And that's what miles past sickening. Miles. So I guess that pretty much brings us to the end of the program. Thanks to you, those of you who jumped in to try to help us reach our monthly goal in the last couple of days. It is sincerely appreciated. We still need help, considerably more help. But we keep, you know, we keep going. We keep going. If you can help, the way to do it is over at headonradionetwork.com. There's a PayPal button there. And there's a snail mail address if you prefer not to use PayPal. And it is sincerely appreciated. Thanks to Peter Godbold, John Fox, our chief engineer, Ben Birch, the man who's responsible for all the streaming and podcasting that goes out, WhiteRoseSociety.org. Thanks to our moderators in the chat room, Sue, Lottie. Thanks to our news ninjas, Gene and Susan. Thanks to our blogger, Texas Betsy. To our southern correspondent, Matt Osborne, OsborneInc.com. Thanks to Coal River Mountain Watch, CRMW.net, and ColeRiverWind.org. They never quit, they never give up, and they are the bravest, hardest-working people I know. And always, always, always. Gina, it's all for you.
With America's only born and bred Southern liberal talk host. Head On with Bob Kincaid is brought to you each night by Coal River Mountain Watch. Coal River Mountain Watch invites you to become part of the solution, part of a sustainable future, part of the uprising against mountaintop removal. Coal River Mountain Watch, CRMW.net. And now, from high in the hills of beautiful West Bicod, Virginia, here's Bob Kincaid on the Head On Radio Network.
Well, howdy! good evening and welcome aboard. You know, sometimes the universe does not cooperate with you in terms of the plans that one has made for an evening's programming. For instance, yesterday, being Monday, was Moran Monday. And we did have our fair share of Morans. But God, we got buried with them today. Holy mackerel. And you know, we did yesterday without even a passing glimmer of a nomination for the former Vice President of the United States. You know, I know that they think that, and maybe that's what this is. It's just a finger in Attorney General Eric Holder's eye. But maybe, just maybe, maybe what they're doing is, well, Dick Cheney said, well, I was a proud proponent of...
Well, I was a proud proponent of waterboarding.
He said that. He admitted it in front of millions of people on the TV box on Sunday.
I was a big fan of waterboarding. We had the Office of Legal Counsel to prepare those memos to give us cover for what we were going to do.
He said it! He said it! And these are the same people who complain about the FBI Mirandizing the BVD bomber by giving him his Miranda rights. Right? You know, these right-wingers are so godforsaken stupid. Do they not realize that you can't get a conviction or use the stuff that's been said until you've Mirandized the guy? That you can't use it in court, with that not Mirandizing a fellow is enough to get his conviction overturned, and so therefore there are some technical things. Look, you know, it's just like the mass. You know, you got it. There are some things that have to be mumbled over the cup before you can take the drink. There are some Latin words or whatever that have to be mumbled over the cracker before you can eat it. It's procedural, I guess, is the word I'm looking for. But Dick Cheney, Richard B. Dick, big time Cheney, actually admitted to war crimes. He admitted violation of the federal law. Never mind that squishy international law or those inconvenient Nuremberg promulgations. Dick Cheney admitted to the violation of a federal felony that carries the death penalty. And what he's betting on is that nobody in the Obama administration has the guts to call him out.
Pick up the gun. Pick up the gun. Pick up the gun.
He's betting on it. And it's a safe bet that he may be right. Oy. But that was that was pretty stupid. That was pretty moranical. So there's that. The other thing, but and climate stupidity. Climate stupidity. Oh my God. This is a beautiful thing.